both governments have...
The social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Breaking news. Strange black pyramid UFO ships over every major city on the Earth. People are exhilarated and scared. Reptilian strange creatures are beaming down. My God, they're beaming me up with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put the... Listen to the Church of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchard, bringing you the high strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com. Radio.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Hi, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and along with my co-host, Victor the Voice Furman with Second Sight NYC. Victor, who's our guest this week?
Chris, our guest this week is C.K. Quarterman, author of Demons and Deliverance. Learn what devils and demons are and what you can do to ensure you're never a victim. By the way, Chris, there are some people who think that you're a demon. Why is it that I've never seen your horns?
Because that's because when I'm with you, I'm never horny. I mean, give me a break.
Hi, everybody. This is Erica Getch. I hope to see you on Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific on the Galactic Connection, keeping you connected 1 hour at a time. For more information, please visit thegalacticconnection.com.
You are listening to UPRN 107.9 New Orleans.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. But you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side. Only on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tax base, because people already had to drive so far to go shopping. Why drive to this town to have to pay extra if you go to that town, you know, just 45 minutes, you know, one direction or another, and not pay that high tax rate? Or you could go like an hour in another direction and be in another state with a substantially lower rate than that state. So the end result was they really shot themselves in the foot, because instead of having a reasonable tax base on a thriving business community, they killed their business community because they could no longer compete. You know, and our entire economy is changing because of the fact that online shopping is so easy and delivery is so easy. In the old days with mail order, you had to wait for the catalog to come. You picked out what you wanted to order. You sent your check off with your order form. 6 to 8 weeks later, you got whatever. There was a huge incentive to go down to the local store and buy something that maybe you didn't like quite as well, but you could have it now. Today, I can order it tonight, and I can have it at the latest by Thursday. Some companies will even offer to have it to me the next day. If I order before, too late today anyhow. So, you know, the competition against the brick and mortar stores has become much more intense in terms of the number of goods, the quality of goods, the origin or place they were manufactured. All those things are very much in the competitive area now. And if your local stores are, you know, we live in a small town. It's the biggest small town I've ever lived in, but it's still, with less than 20,000 people, it qualifies as a small town. There's a limited number of stores. When I go into the store, I know that I'm going to be confronted with a high number of imported goods because cheaper is often regarded as better by the American consumer. But if you're looking for something better, you may turn online to find something that was manufactured in the United States or came from Europe or whatever, that was of higher quality than what you could find locally. That means that the local business doesn't get your business. And if you throw in that extra incentive of the sales tax issue, then, you know, yes, there is a huge reason to shop online versus in person. In addition, I don't have to spend my time driving around. I don't have to pay the exorbitant fuel costs that we're looking at, or any of those other things. It's just easier. So do you think that really that sales taxes are a good idea, or should communities come with an alternative way of finding the funding they need to support their community services?
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about the sales tax thing, one of the things to bring to people's attention is that this February, about 2 months ago, there was a bill that was introduced in the House and the Senate to require retailers, which are a slang for retailers on the Internet, they want them to collect sales tax. And this, again, goes back to that 1992 decision that Quill was a provider of office products, which was done old school style by mail order, because 1992 was pretty much all out of anything where you could order stuff over the Internet. Okay, so the state, under that Supreme Court ruling, since 1992, the last 20 years, a state cannot require an out-of-state retailer without a physical presence in that state to collect the sales tax or use tax, depending on which word that they use. Or Arizona would use a compensatory use tax. And so, since Quill is in North Dakota, Quill didn't have to charge you a sales tax as a resident of Arizona of 11% to be able to buy that product from Quill. And then they would UPS, Federal Express, or United States Postal Service into your house. So now 20 years later, the purchasers still legally owe a corresponding use tax on taxable purchases from the retailers in those other states. So I, in Mississippi, would still owe a taxable purchase tax if I bought the item from XYZ.com in California, but most people are not aware of this or they choose to just ignore it. So now what they're doing is they're introducing this proposed bill for streamlined sales tax into the Congress and the Senate. And what they want to do is they want a company that has more than $1 million in sales to have to go back and try to collect the sales tax from you if you live in Louisiana, if you live in Mississippi, if you live in Georgia, and you're buying a product from a company over the Internet out of California. So again, no matter what I personally think about how the fight goes on with this sales tax on a local level, when it comes to the way that it is being applied to the digital goods, it is going to come down to a national decision that's probably going to have to be written up and lobbied, and you're going to have to try to get all 50 of the states plus the District of Columbia on board, which is going to be harder than getting an amendment to the United States Constitution passed, because at least in that case, you only have to get two-thirds of the states to agree to it, plus you have to have a vote on it nationally. In this case, you're going to have lawyers fighting back and forth, I think, with each other, Jeff, for another 5 or 10 years.
So you don't anticipate a blanket tax being applied in the next few years?
I don't think so. I think that we have more of a chance of getting a flat tax passed in the United States as a way to ease some of the pressures where you have outrageous sales taxes in a state like New York versus outrageous sales taxes in a state like Arizona, which they're either higher than they are actually in New York. In Arizona, in a lot of cases, you're paying more tax. You've retired from New York. You moved to Arizona. You're paying more for stuff than you did when you lived in New York. And then you've got people in another state like Alabama. Then it's the amount of difference just in taxes that you're paying is a substantial percentage of their cost of living. So I think that that needs to be adjusted first, in my personal opinion. And I think we actually have a better chance of having something like a flat tax or value-added tax like the Europeans did with adding to the value of something when you buy it, and then having that assessed, and then having the states work on a agreement so that the revenues are then shared based on where the entity is, the business, the corporation is making that sales, because each business has to have a VAT tax number. And I think if the United States adopts that, then each business not only has its own corporate tax number, state by state, but they would also have that VAT tax number. And that would pretty much take care of this. You wouldn't end up with the lawyers at each other's throats, except, and this is the big funny part about it to me, except in the case of the state of Louisiana, which still does not abide by the Uniform Commercial Code.
Well, yeah, that'd be interesting to see if they decided to fall into line or if they decided to stand alone still. And who knows which way they would go. Louisiana surprised me on a number of occasions with the choices that have been made there. And, you know, that's often the case. Politics often surprise us, don't they?
Yeah,
you never know.
I really don't want to have to fight with my neighbors. If I live, like, we lived on the coast here, and we're less than 20 miles away. Should I feel compelled to have to drive 20 miles to go buy a bag of Doritos because it's going to be, you know, cheaper?
Well, some places I've lived, you had to drive 20 miles to buy a bag of Doritos, period. Sometimes further. But, you know, that's not the norm in most of America, I have to admit.
Yeah, basically what we're saying is instead of going to your local store if some guy, and it's going to happen again, you know, comes up with a service where you can order your groceries and 3 days from now somebody will be knocking at your door with your groceries in the back of a van, and it's cheaper for you to order your groceries even though they're being purchased in your state and delivered to your house, you're going to order it off of the website that gives you the cheapest price, even if you've got to wait 3 days to have it locally delivered. And so that's really what they're looking at. It'd be like if I ordered my groceries through a website that was in Texas, and then it took 3 days, but somebody arrived here in Mississippi, knocked at the door, oh, here's the groceries that you ordered. In other words, it doesn't matter where it's locally being sourced as long as it's being delivered. And that's the difference between tangible goods like your office furniture in cases, too, with states that have food sales taxes, Mississippi being one of those. It's a tangible taxable thing. And so without a national referendum on the whole thing, I don't know that we're going to have a solution to that problem. And I think the digital goods, the problem with the taxation and the loopholing and the bickering and the going back and forth and I'm going to sue you over, you know, you not making somebody pay for my tax, even though, you know, you sold the same thing that I did on eBay, I had to have the guy that lived in Oregon pay the tax, and the guy in Colorado didn't have to pay the tax, and now, you know, I have to take you to court and sue you to get the money back. It's crazy, and it definitely needs a solution, because you're not talking about durable things anymore. You're talking about services, things that people really, really want, and that's the end of it. Is that it really comes down to what consumers want, and with things becoming more popular online, I think you're going to see that urgency, because people want that so bad, is going to be what actually pushes this way. In the case of prohibition, it took years. With the digital information age and people wanting, like you said, to be able to go online, purchase the item and have it delivered here at home before Friday morning at 10 o'clock. We're no longer living in an age where it's going to be okay for you to wait 6 to 8 weeks for delivery.
Oh, if you made somebody wait 6 to 8 weeks for delivery now, that'd be a fit. You'd have more complaints with Better Business Bureau and every place else that would accept them than you can possibly imagine. We have become an instant society. We're used to very instant gratification. Even in terms of, you know, our entertainment now. We get video on demand. We get our audio on demand. You know, we don't wait for anything, you know, and other than the next installment to be released. And sometimes, you know, in the case of books and movies, we may wait months or even years between one installment and the next.
Yeah, one very important thing to bring up about this whole thing with the digital goods and the taxing is that it is currently illegal for me to have to pay a sales tax for my internet service provider. And what is basically happening by proxy is that if I'm having to pay a sales tax on a Zynga game card that I bought at a store, because the store is required by law to charge me a sales tax for that plastic card that has that code number, I have to log in and I have to give the code number and my password and so on, and everybody that's been through it knows how that process works. In order for me to eventually be able to build the bigger, better mousetrap in my Zynga game, I've had to pay a sales tax, which otherwise is illegal, that I don't have to pay to my internet service provider. So they are providing a way to tax your use of something that otherwise does not have a tax attached to it, which is doing something by proxy. And I think that's the way people should reasonably look at it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting. Another thing that we've seen change over the past decade even is in the beginning, almost everything on the internet, websites, various groups and so on and so on, were free. You know, almost everything was free. And you get a lot of things free on the internet. And that's no longer today. Things that were free even a few years ago today charge. Or they don't exist at all. So we're seeing more and more subscription-based information delivery, website delivery, and so forth and so on. Do you see this trend continuing, or should it begin to taper off at this point?
I do think it's going to continue. I think the thing that people should be paying attention to, though, is this sales tax thing, because you're going to have people say, oh, it's only fair that, you know, you live in New York State, you should pay your New York State sales tax because you're buying a digital subscription to the Wall Street Journal so that you can have the Wall Street Journal. And no, it's no longer free for you to go download the front page. You have to have a subscription to have access to anything other than the headline teasers. I think that attitude is not going to change because the website and the content providers are having to pay people with higher levels of skill. They no longer have people that are not trained in how to use computers to be able to produce the content, so they're having to pay more to keep people on staff at the newspapers. A lot of people will tell you that print advertising, print as a delivery service, is dead. And in the case of print, you've seen things like Newsweek go out of business. Newsweek, in particular, Gia, is a magazine that was on the newsstands since the 1970s. If you go to the newsstand today in any city in America, you will not find Newsweek in a printed format. You have to subscribe to Newsweek on the internet, have it delivered to your iPhone, your handheld tablet, your laptop, or your desktop in order to read it.
Now, I happen to have I don't think I have any right now, but in the past I've had a number of digital subscriptions. I liked them because they were right there, and I could go back. The pages never got messed up. They didn't need put anywhere. I could go back and look at a recipe, you know, from 5 years ago in the magazine, whatever. It was convenient. Same thing with my books, okay? I've got thousands of books in my cloud library. It's convenient, and I really, really like it. The problem has been in the delivery. With some companies, you had a specific program you had to download, and that was a pain. Others, you just looked at them in your browser, and so forth and so on. Uniform delivery has been an issue with the magazine subscriptions. And now, on Kindle, with certain Kindle formats, the color ones specifically, you know, you can, once again, there's more of a uniform delivery that makes more sense. However, you have to have specific devices in order to get the subscription through Kindle. I'm not sure about other companies whether they offer digital magazines as well.
Right.
Do you see that becoming more of a trend? Will they come up with some more uniform delivery so I don't need 7 different programs to view magazines digitally?
I think a lot of it comes, it's that, like, you're asking people, would you buy a specific car if you could only go to the XYZ gas station to fill that car up? Is exactly what you're asking them, what the delivery service on these readers and the other devices. And a lot of it, what it comes down to is copyright protection programming that's on the devices and on the actual files themselves. And what you're wanting to do, again, is take an issue, and that is going to have to go back for the standards boards and for information interchange, because, no, you don't want to have a specific media type that is slaved to a certain device. That'd just be like saying you can get Newsweek, the magazine, that is only available on computers, but you have to have a book from Barnes & Noble to be able to read Newsweek. Well, then that puts everybody that has an iPhone, a desktop computer, or Kindle, which is the competing device, out of the market to read Newsweek, and it also puts Newsweek out of the market for reaching any of those people that have those devices. So I think that you do need to see in the near future the development of a more, you know, standard form of delivery. And we've tried in the last several years to have PDF standards, the MP3 standards, and it just seems like the more devices and things that come out, the more programs that come out, the more varied the different file types become.
Right, and, you know, it would be really, really nice because, okay, like in the Kindle in particular, some of the things that I have on my PC are there's other things that are available if you have the actual Kindle devices. I can use my Android cell phone, and that's fine. I can read it on there, but it's very similar to the PC experience. They haven't created interchangeability of the programs so that you can use all of your devices. Kindle comes closest for me. I've tried Kobo. I didn't really care for that particular one. I found it awkward, I guess. And, you know, I haven't tried the Nook on the PC. So, you know, we really do need to see something that really crosses the boundaries. You should be able to, you know, enjoy it on your Apple device, your PC device, your Android device, equally.
Right, and it's like comparing base types with different newspapers. A lot of newspapers use a specific base type. Like the Wall Street Journal has a base type you're going to recognize. The New York Times has a base type that you're going to recognize. And even those things, the fonts that people read the content in, are protected by copyright, so there's all kinds of issues when it comes to whether or not I want to display my blog in a certain typeface. I have to license that through a company like TrueType Font, and so that means that I have to buy a digital good in order for me to provide that font to you as you read my blog, whether my blog is free or whether you're having to subscribe to my blog. So when we take the entire thing and we smash it down a little bit, what we're really talking about is, are we going to see a single system for being able to pay for and make sure that the people that are providing this content are given their proper revenues, the state that they live in are given their proper revenues, and that the artists and the people buying the stuff are equally protected?
That's important, too. You know, I would be very unhappy to discover that somebody was selling my book and not paying me any royalties, or that they were giving it away so that I couldn't sell it. I understand completely why artists want to protect their rights, because they've put a lot of effort and investment into that product. Just the same as somebody who built a house. They've invested hours of work in building that house. They don't want to see somebody come along and say, "That's not your house. I want that house." And
well,
just takes it away.
To where we have to say that we're going to take our break.
Yep, it is that time. So while we're away from your computer, don't move a muscle. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll be back with more conversation with Gregory Miller.
ChurchofMabusRadio.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
this is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Hi, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and along with my co-host, Victor the Voice Furman with Second Sight NYC. Victor, who's our guest this week?
Chris, our guest this week is C.K. Quarterman, author of Demons and Deliverance. Learn what devils and demons are and what you can do to ensure you're never a victim. By the way, Chris, there are some people who think that you're a demon. Why is it that I've never seen your horns?
Because that's because when I'm with you, I'm never horny. I mean, give me a break.
Hi, everybody. This is Erica Getch. I hope to see you on Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific on the Galactic Connection, keeping you connected 1 hour at a time. For more information, please visit thegalacticconnection.com.
You are listening to UPRN 107.9 New Orleans.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. But you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side, only on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and tonight we're talking with Gregory Miller. Now, don't forget, send in your questions to my email, giascott@exogenynetwork.com, or you can call in with your questions and comments at 1-504-273-7379. Once again, that number is 504-273-7379. Now, we're going to start off the second half of the program with look at some of the weird stuff that we found for sale via the Internet. When I gave Greg the challenge this morning, the restriction was that the products had to be G-rated. So, we're not going to tell you where you can find the life-size blow-up alien doll or any of its features. Sorry, just isn't going to happen. But I'm going to start off my list with bacon. It was initially a whim because of an ongoing joke with our daughter, who is a huge bacon fan. We have also encountered bacon-flavored popcorn in the past, and while that wasn't a success, at least with our crowd, obviously it must have its fans as it is still available. Now, if you want a bacon jerky sampler, I did discover that you could have one shipped to you for just under $50 from baconfreak.com. And since I had found bacon jerky, why not something a little bit more exotic on the jerky front? So lo and behold, just using the words exotic jerky, I had a handful of companies offering everything from alligator to ostrich to yak. But when I wanted to find zebra jerky, so I had A to Z, I struck out in the United States. No zebra jerky, although I did find some zebra meat for sale. So if you want zebra jerky, I'm sorry, guys, it just isn't going to work. But that sent me off on the trail of zebras. So if I couldn't buy zebra jerky, could I buy a zebra? Could I do that online? Well, I definitely found where you can see photos and prices for baby zebras. I'm sure it may be a little bit more complicated than just sending your payment via the Internet and delivery happening a week later when the UPS or FedEx truck pulls up. But with prices northwards of $5,000, I think I'm going to wait to buy a zebra or two. You can find them, though, at zebrasareus.com. Yeah. So I could buy a zebra or zebra meat and bacon in a lot of different forms. What about something a bit more useful or maybe a little bit weirder? So the weirder appealed. I hit on a website called DudeIWantThat.com. Now there, for just over $60, you can buy yourself a hairy man chest sweater. Just perfect for that budding adolescent, right? Or maybe a fantastic gag gift for the bride-to-be. They had a lot of stuff at DudeIWantThat. I mean, serious. There was a lot of stuff. Tactical bacon. Anatomically correct leggings. DJ underwear. They have stuff there that just boggles your mind as well as empties your wallet. How about tossing down about $425 for some gold leaf filled capsules so you can really poop gold? Yeah. Okay. I couldn't help sticking around at Dude, I Want That. They kept sending me back to bacon, though. And I discovered you could buy bacon-flavored soda pop, bacon candy canes, and the list went on, bacon jam. There was all sorts of things there. And then again, if you move on to even weirder yet than bacon candy canes, I thought, okay, let's see if we can find thought control. So if thought control by aliens has been a problem lately, I found where you could get free directions. Yeah, free. To make thought control helmets. Just go to stopabductions.com and you can put an end to that problem. So, Greg, what did you find in the weird front?
Well, you know, like you said, the whole thing started off, and I think that the people at thinkgeek.com, thinkgeek.com, actually might have run into my daughter at some point because they have a category on their website. Wasn't just about bacon. It's actually called Zombies and Bacon. So I said, well, if there's ever a correlation between zombies and bacon, that's something that she might want to look at because those are two of her favorite subjects. And so that's where that whole journey took place. And if you're into zombies, you can get everything there from a zombie board game called The Last Night on Earth, and you can even find zombie yard gnomes eating a flamingo, a pink flamingo, you know, the typical lawn flamingo. You can find this, and yes, it's available online, and yes, you may be expected to pay your online sales tax. Other than that, I had set a few funny sites where people could go look at some things to you, GM, before, and I did find the ones about making sure, you know, sure that you could have gold-plated poo. I found those to be mildly amusing, to say the least. And again, we're keeping the whole thing G-rated, so there are definitely some odd things that are out there in the world, and I guess one of the first things that I would recommend to anybody is that they go to their favorite search engine, and they can type in the word weird, and they can start themselves off on their own little journey.
I'm pulling up that file since I know that your computer has decided to be uncooperative.
One of my favorite things, though, I'm looking at was available at baconchocolate.com, which is run by people that have the same site. Now, this is baconchocolate, all one word, .com. They have milk chocolate and dark chocolate bacon bars. So this is a candy bar. Instead of having the almonds in it, it has bacon.
And, you know, that would probably be good.
Well, I'm looking at it, and it's, well, applewood bacon, alderwood salt, and chocolate. I'm looking at $33 for this, for one package.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, good stuff. Good stuff costs a lot. Now, I have to admit, you know, one of my favorite sandwiches happens to qualify as weird, and it's a grilled peanut butter and bacon sandwich. And it's not something I make very often because, obviously, the combination of grilling it and the bacon in it and then the fat and the peanut butter to boot, it doesn't qualify as a truly healthy meal, but, oh, it's so delicious. And I actually converted you to being a fan of the grilled peanut butter and bacon sandwich as well. So, you know, I could see bacon being good in a lot of different... And when we were testing cupcake recipes before our wedding... One of the recipes we tested was a bacon chocolate cupcake, which got kind of mixed reviews.
And again, I guess it comes down to what type of bacon you're using and also a combination of the different chocolates and the salts. One of the more interesting things from the baconfreak.com site was bacon toffee.
Yeah, I see that it's at the top of your list there. That qualifies as just as odd as the bacon soda pop, or the bacon candy canes, or the bacon frosting that I found.
Yes, and then there's the Torani bacon flavoring syrup that you can add to your coffee.
Oh, yes, I remember you showing that to me. Yeah, Greg is a huge fan of Torani coffee flavoring syrups, and I can just see him with bacon flavored syrup, as well as our daughter. I mean, can you imagine if she got a hold of it? She'd drink a whole pot of coffee, and she doesn't even like coffee.
That's kind of where it gets weird. Now, on the zombie tangent, I really didn't get any further than the lawn gnomes eating the flamingo. But
you
I
had
do
this
know,
book that you sent me, The Disaster Diaries, Worrying Apocalypse.
Yeah, and that's where, see, the wonderful thing about internet search engines is you'll come across things that are correlated, and that was something new. We've done, and we know, several people that are into... educating people as to how to actually survive this stuff. And that particular book, I found it linked over in that corollary search from Amazon.com. It's relatively new. It just came out within the last couple of months. The guy did one of these real-life experience things, sort of like the guy that, you know, somebody said, hey, you can't eat McDonald's breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a month. You'll die. And he said, oh, yeah? I'm going to go out and make a movie about this. Well, this guy did a book about different things that go through somebody's head when they think they're not going to survive different types of apocalypses. And he's gone out and he's actually put himself through these different scenarios and went and in some cases received extensive training as to how to go about making sure he knew what these survival techniques were so that he could put himself at ease knowing that he was prepared in the event that he did come across the zombie bacon apocalypse.
Yeah, and, you know, we have to laugh to a degree. We have a number of friends who are preppers. To one degree, we're probably considered preppers. But we've gone out and we've done a lot of these survival things ourselves. And, you know, there are times when I think, you know, if I have to eat that, I'd probably be better off dead, you know. Because we've eaten some less than wonderful things. I think probably the worst was the 1970s Vietnam War era. What do they call them? Lerps or something like that? Whatever. It was the most dreadful chili you can possibly imagine. It's even worse than the cheapest chili you buy in a can. You know, and you know, seeing what M&Ms look like after being in dry storage for several decades, it's not appetizing. It's not pretty, folks. People who say that they could, you know, things like that could survive a nuclear holocaust, they're lying. Yeah, time alone will deteriorate that stuff to something you don't want to put in your mouth. I didn't sample them. I also didn't let Greg sample them. But we've eaten MREs. We've cooked foraged foods. Some of it is okay. Some of it doesn't suit the modern palate. Some of it's downright awful. Some of it's potentially dangerous. When you get into the whole mushroom thing, I guess I'm falling in the school of I regard it all as poisonous because I can't tell the difference. And then finding out some of it's okay to eat at this stage, but it's not okay to eat at that stage, it's just too complicated. I regard wild mushrooms as all poisonous. It's real simple that way because a lot of them are incredibly fatal. Even the tiniest taste is enough to kill you. So, you know, some things I'm just not going to do. I've also learned that look-alike berries. We have a bush, some people call a high bush blueberry. It's actually a small tree. It's not even a bush. And there's a look-alike that is called gallberry. Now, if you are, the leaves are similar, the berries are similar, they come out at the same time. But the growth of the plant is a little bit different. And if you are ignorant and put a gallberry in your mouth, you won't forget that lesson ever again because they're the most foul-tasting things you can possibly imagine. So, you know, I can kind of get this whole book. You know, it actually sounds like something I'd probably enjoy reading is this guy's experiences because some of it's funny when you go out and you do it. The disasters you can have when you're doing one of these survival shelters or trying to set up a snare and, you know, so forth and so on. It can go horribly and hilariously wrong. Now, granted, when you're involving weapons and stuff, it can be just horrible. But, you know, a lot of times it is funny how things can go wrong. I remember the effort I put into learning to use a flint and steel to start a fire, which for anybody who thinks that they've got it all under control just by buying the thing and putting it in their emergency backpack, don't even think that. You better get that thing out and try starting a fire because it's not as easy as they make it look on TV, definitely. So, yeah, that book does sound like interesting. Once again, it's called The Disaster Diaries, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Apocalypse. I don't have an author, but I'll see if I can get one real quick if the internet is cooperative.
Yeah, and it's important to, you know, you'll come across strange things. You'll find Hello Kitty Darth Vader, you know, that somebody's taken a picture of on the internet. That's part of the fun when you get into the discussions about, you know, your digital goods and services. And, you know, at the very beginning of everything, for people to be able to access the internet in some cases, Gia, they had to pay by the minute with a service like CompuServe.
Oh, yeah. When I first looked into it, you paid by the minute. In addition, I had to pay incredible long-distance charges if I was going to do it.
You know, that's really what we don't want to see happen with people. We're not going to name names, but we were just earlier this afternoon also realizing that one of the major cell phone carriers is finally promoting the idea of breaking away from the paradigm of doing the same thing with charging people for everything from data overages to voice overages to text overages to, you know, out-of-area roaming overages and just getting rid of all that. So we may actually end up
And the two-year contract, which I absolutely despise because, you know, I guess my life isn't that predictable. Everybody knows not all cell phone carriers are created equally for all communities. So if you move or something happens, the good cell phone carrier from where you were before is now the really horrible one, and you're stuck with them.
Yeah, and nobody wants to be stuck with the service that you hate. And this goes back to this whole thing with, you know, digital goods and services and what is more important to most people than being able to have their cell phone. It really isn't as important with the texting and the data usage. But for it to all become more, you know, user-friendly, and especially in the wallet area, user-friendly is a good thing. We got to remember, too, we have a lot less payphones in America than we did 25 years ago. You know, people rely on their cell phones. There are people that do not have any other form of telephone in their house now other than a cell phone, and some of that was due to privacy issues. People just got tired of the regular home phone number being used for telemarketers or the escalating cost of the phone company itself, and as to whether or not you wanted to make in-state long-distance charges and other things. The phone company sort of forced the model, and then the cell phone companies followed suit, and what we're looking at now is the same type of behavior pattern is happening with these services that are being delivered over the Internet. And yet the ones that are really being affected are the cable company and the telephone company. And we use those as standard labels. But now the cable company and the telephone company are the ones that are being affected by what people are choosing for their digital goods and services that are coming into their house. And
but isn't it partly the fault of the companies alone? They failed to recognize a shift in society and the way we use technology.
I think that the cell phone companies are going to look at it, of course. They're going to look at the other companies that change their practices first, then they're going to claim that they're being victimized. No company that overcharges their customer that knows that they're doing it ahead of time is ever going to admit to it. That's just, you know, part of the way business is done, not just in the United States. You have to remember that the world's richest man is Carlos Slim, that owns the cellular telephone company in Mexico.
Okay, well, you know, when I look at the whole concept of the lock you into a 2-year contract or we're going to take your firstborn child, which is about the way cell phone companies are, and their carrot is that they're going to give you this phone at a subsidized cost. Well, the problem is, you know, they're charging a higher rate to pay for the phone, and I understand wanting to recoup their cost on the phone. But after a period of time, that phone's been more than paid for. But they continue to charge you that same high fee, even if you are what is now referred to as out of contract. And I've sometimes spent as much as a year out of contract simply because I just didn't want to be locked in. I'm a huge fan of the no-contract services simply because that 2-year thing, I really just frosts me. I cannot understand why consumers accept it as what they have to do. It doesn't make sense to me as a consumer.
Well, part of that is that the device has always been prohibitively expensive without bundling the financing in as part of the sweetener for the salespeople. And so then they're getting paid more over a longer term, and it is locked in. And so this is guaranteeing that the salespeople who are out on the floor pushing the devices, they come out. And that has been the thing you were talking earlier about the
I bought a smartphone over a year ago. And the smartphone, I had to pay, I think, $100. But by adding the company's termination fee to the amount that I paid on the phone to begin with, that's just the termination fee, is more than what they charge if you buy the phone outright.
Again, and then, yeah, that comes down to intimidating people so that they don't, they look at it and the termination fee is hanging over their head. So then they're, oh, I'm going to be penalized, and I really don't like this one. I want the X phone over there because it, you know, it does this. And yet they will hold on to the device because they, in most cases, will be dead honest about this, cannot afford a termination fee to go out and just say, okay, I'm done with the telephone company here. I'm going to pay the $200 to $300 charge and then go over and change the device. And so we're looking at a model now which finally has a chance to change because of the way the providers are forcing each other to change the way that that game is being played with the consumer. Beforehand, the consumer was forced to play the game because if you wanted the device, you could, where you could set your hands-free phone down, push a button, and tell the phone in voice commands what you wanted it to do, then you were stuck with that termination fee, with that two-year contract, and the only person that was happy about it was the seller, because they were making a commission off you for the next 24 months.
Right, right. And you know, I think that in general, this dissatisfaction that I feel about the way the contracts are handled has become more widespread, and with more people seeking services without contracts, I think this first company that went away from the contract business formula to a no-contract system is probably seeing reality, because with the huge number of no-contract services that are now available, which in the beginning there was the only one that I know of was TracFone. And my first cell phone, as a matter of fact, was this gigantic brick, literally brick, that I paid something like 50 cents a minute to use. It was, at that time, I just wanted to try it to see if I would like it. Turned out I discovered it was useful. I didn't think I was going to, which is why I'd been resisting the whole cell phone thing. So then I went to a contract phone because it was cheaper in terms of using it. And I've had a cell phone ever since. But now I'm looking at, you know, the no contract services, and they now are far less expensive than most of the services provided by the big companies. And yet the big companies are still the ones actually providing the service that I'm now paying half or less in many cases for the same service. So, you know, a lot of consumers are wising up and saying, ah. And I think that this first company's move to get away from the contracts is an attempt to prevent happening to them the same thing that's happened to the traditional hardwired phone.
Yeah, and I think that if they can take their telephone, cellular, internet contact providing service, actually blend that in with what you were talking about in the first hour with digital goods, that they're going to be more successful if they can have it where they, and usually you get tricky. You don't want exclusive digital goods because you want the digital goods to be exchangeable between participants on different varying devices. So you don't want to have the same problem. We'll use this as a historical example. That when the iPod was first introduced, the only consumers that could use the iPod and download the content for their iPod were the owners of Apple computers, and so that had a huge consumer backlash.
Right, and people people don't like the proprietary concept. And there again, we talked about this in the first hour with digital goods. You know, like my complaint with magazines, that it was restricted to one device or a particular set of software, et cetera, et cetera. And there wasn't anything that was more universal available. And so that when you bought your subscription for a digital magazine through Amazon, you had to have the appropriate Amazon device to read it. Well, they won't even sell it to you unless you got the right device.
And what we're getting to now is the development of the devices and the digital content delivery as a part of a norm in society, where a few years ago, even at some users today, if you were to take one of these funny pictures of pancake soda from Japan and you sent it to a friend that had a cell phone that's on a very limited, structured, you know, very strict providing plan, they're actually going to be mad and call you back or text you or email you and say, hey, you know, it cost me a quarter to open the message that had a picture of stupid Japanese pancake soda that you found on the internet. And the thing is, now, as a society, what we're looking at in the United States finally is that within the next few years, you will see that that particular friend is no longer going to have a proverbial digital gun to their head. They had to pay 25 cents to get that picture delivered to their phone.
Well, I can remember telling my family, and it wasn't over cost, please don't send me pictures on my cell phone. They show up the size of a postage stamp, and I don't even know what it is. You know, email them to me instead. And, you know, now with our much larger screens, you know, when I see a picture on my phone, it's pretty easy to see.
And we've actually had this thing happen in the last 5 years. We have a friend in particular that would send a picture from a certain device. It was supposed to be new, cutting edge, and all of that, and they would send it, and it would go to our device. Every time they sent us a phone picture they took with their camera phone, and you tried to open it on our phone, it would shut our phone down. Our phone was removed.
Yeah, that was with an Android phone, and yeah, it would completely crash the phone. And therefore, again, it was apparently very incompatible devices, because we know he didn't have an Android phone. He had another operating system.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than bacon zombies, I mean, literally, it's zombies and bacon. You can look that up. The other weird stuff.
Oh, weird, there's plenty of weird. Oh, before we go on any further, The Disaster Diaries was written by Sam Sheridan. So if you want to look it up, it does look like it'd probably be a very interesting book. It lists for $15.14 in hardcover from Amazon, or you can also get it for $12.99 on your Kindle. But it does sound like an interesting book. Maybe we'll have to see about getting him to come on as a guest 1 week. But anyhow, you know, as far as weird stuff, you can find all sorts of things. And if you go from digital goods to services, it can really rapidly get weird. If you go to the things people do, okay, of all the things in this world, the weirdest things of all have got to be people. People do the weirdest thing. One thing that came across, I think you sent it to me, Greg, was about a woman who tried to sell her children, a toddler and an infant, on Facebook to get bail money for her boyfriend.
Yeah, okay. This kind of puts the, you know, the first case that I had heard about this was a few years ago. I don't know the names of the people, but they tried to, and it was claimed that it was a joke. It very well may have been. It's up in British Columbia, Canada. Put their 15-year-old son in a listing on Craigslist.com because his behavior was so terrible that they were, you know, and they, you know, $10,000 was best offer. So they get into some legal trouble there. And yet you see a few years later that, you know, Facebook has shown us where, and some people would say it's the decline of modern society, but, you know, Facebook has shown us where things have devolved to the point that, instead of somebody trying to put an advertisement in a local newspaper classified ad, this lady allegedly was on Facebook trying to sell her children to somebody out of town, for money for bail for a significant other that was in jail. And now she's going to probably find herself in similar circumstances. It just goes to show you how far people are willing to adopt things on the internet now as normal, and then how abnormal that can become.
In this particular case, the woman that she solicited to buy the children reported her. She supposedly asked for $1,000 for the 2-year-old or $4,000 for both the 2-year-old and the infant. I find that bizarre, absolutely bizarre. You know, in another case, right on the same news page that I'm looking at, the accused robber was arrested after a photo was pasted on Facebook, or posted on Facebook. I don't know if they posted, you know, that this is the person they're looking for or what, but, you know, Facebook has helped people in many, many cases find perpetrators of crimes, missing relatives, missing friends, and so forth and so on. So while a lot of times we want to point the finger at social media, especially Facebook, for allowing things like bullying and so forth to go on, it does provide a lot of really positive things. So how do you see social media evolving, you know, in the coming years, Greg?
Well, I don't want to sound like too much of a cynic, but for people in the audience that have seen the movie Minority Report, you know, starred Tom Cruise, I see the social media going somewhere similar in that when you walk past electronic enabled devices, you'll be able to tell who you are, and then start pitching whatever it is they're selling, you know, from a little loudspeaker in the sign while you're walking through the mall, and you're there to do something completely different, but the sensors pick it up. And I think that, you know, the social media is more along the lines of the same thing, except it'll say, hey, you know, your friend Bill bought a pair of these shoes, you know, and he thought they were really great. And so it's not going to be so personal that it's just going to be screaming at you by name and be constantly annoying in that way. It's actually going to be used in a marketing scale to make you sort of jealous of what your friends are purchasing, especially with the digital goods that we were talking about earlier. And so I kind of see the social media in that sense becoming more intrusive. And it depends on your personal point of view. You might think it's really cool to let your friends all know exactly, you know, what you went and did with all the different games and things all day, every day. And then there's other people who are going to be of a different opinion, and they don't want any of that knowledge done. So I guess it turned some people on. It's going to turn some people off. And somewhere there's that happy medium. But I still say that no matter which side of the road it goes down, it's often to the intrusive land.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been cases where people have used social media postings, especially indicating people were going somewhere for the day, going on vacation, whatever, to rob them, to do all sorts of things. And so, you know, there's some serious privacy issues, as well as safety issues, really. You know, if you posted that your husband was gone on a weekend business trip, and that was the time that somebody decided was a good time to break in and kidnap you, you know, that may not be the case for most people, but for some people that might be a genuine risk. So you need to kind of assess what you put in such a public location. Because to a degree, I think everybody is accessible to almost anybody. You know, they can talk about, you can block so-and-so. There's always a way around it. If it's available online anywhere, somebody's going to figure out a way to get to it.
Yeah, and yet when I say intrusive also, what I don't like is the idea of the local pizza delivery company wanting me to like their shop because of their product, but also B, once you're added onto the list, that they might be able to keep tabs on what it is that you're saying, because the information feed works in reverse. So if you make the local pizza shop your friend on the social media site, be very careful what you say, because you might end up being the first victim of the pizza delivery guy to go psycho because he couldn't handle what you wrote and came knocking and said he wasn't delivering a pizza this time.
Right. And, you know, it's just like that old rule that my mother would tell us when we were teenagers. Don't do anything you don't want plastered on the front page of the local newspaper. You know, don't do anything on Facebook that you don't want everybody in your neighborhood, your community, your town, your school, your workplace, whatever, to know, because they will find out. You can't be the Superman online and in fact, you're a bookie nerd and expect that sort of dual reality to continue to exist.
What was your favorite weird thing? And to everybody that's listening, it all also started off because Gia has been picking on me about my choice of work lately, which has been involved inspecting properties and whatnot. She showed me a toy helicopter. She said I could just launch this out of my car and then not have to actually set foot on anyone's property.
When you look at spy gear that you can buy, you will be flabbergasted. Anybody who's listening, just type in spy gear or some similar phrase, and rewording it always helps with your search engines because they just work that way. But you start seeing the websites that come up, the products that come up. You can buy devices to sweep your house for hidden cameras or any place else you take them. You can buy devices to sweep for hidden audio books. You can buy, like, this helicopter with the camera that broadcasts your cell phone. You can buy devices like that. It's, you know, I actually initially saw that on Facebook, and it was labeled as, you know, in quotation marks, my first drone. And it's not all that different from the concept of the drones that are being used for surveillance. Similar concept, just in a much less expensive package. So, you know, just the spy gear that's available to average Joe citizen in the United States is absolutely amazing. Somebody could walk up, be filming you, be recording what you say and whatever, and never have a device visible to you. Buttons that were cameras, pens that were cameras, glasses that were cameras, you know, all sorts of things. I mean, just it was absolutely amazing. So, and I didn't really get into the spy websites all that much when I went off on another tangent. It's like, you know, your ADD goes to town on the internet because you see one thing and it reminds you of something else and you go off on this tangent. Sort of like when I ended up on the bacon thing, then I found that website about, what was it? Dude, I want that. I mean, they had an incredible number of goods. They don't actually sell them themselves. Apparently, it's linking you to the site that does sell them. But they feature them on there. And I had to die laughing at that Harry Manchest sweater. I mean, it was absolutely hilarious. You know, I can definitely imagine if I had $60 to blow in a gag gift, several people that I'd give it to. Because it was that funny. Now, maybe it's because I'm a woman, but, you know, I thought it was hilarious.
Well, I guess it sort of answers that. You know, I find out, folks, my wife's a little bit of a voyeur and wants me to walk around wearing a naked T-shirt.
No, it wasn't a naked T-shirt. It was a sweatshirt that was designed, printed with the image of a hairy man's chest. And, you know, in your case, you know, I see the real thing often enough. I don't, you know, I was thinking more of just to watch somebody's face when they held up that shirt and looked at it. I mean, you know, $60 for the sweatshirt, the look would be priceless. I mean, really, really priceless.
There you have it. So, I would probably rather see you wearing that shirt with the man Terry chest than actually go outside one day and see the lawn gnomes eating the pink flamingo on our front lawn. So if I have to choose between a couple of things, then there you go for me.
I see, there you are talking about pink flamingos, and that's one thing we don't have in our yard. I've never had a pink flamingo. Matter of fact, I can't even remember the last time I saw somebody's yard with pink flamingos.
They were in New Orleans, everybody.
I never saw any in New Orleans.
That's because an odd known started to eat them.
Yeah, we're going to have to see about getting ourselves an assortment. I just found pink flamingos wearing Santa Claus suits, okay? $39.99 with 8 holiday clothing outfits. So not only could you have pink flamingos in your front yard, you can dress them. Now, if you just want a set of 2 pink, classic pink flamingos, that's only $12.95. Yeah, that's affordable art.
Well, I'm also going to say that I think one of the things that you guys might be looking into, folks, is that mind control app. That mind control, because I think somebody has taken over my wife's mind. And if you hear an update from me in the next month or so that says I have a chupacabra on my front lawn, then you'll know why.
Oh, well, you know, the whole idea of lawn art is to catch people's attention. And, you know, imagine having something that had glow-in-the-dark eyes and was motion-activated so that when you went by, it went...
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much it. Reminds me of the first time I was up north in the snow, saw one of those animatronic reindeer, and when you're not expecting the lawn ornaments with the Christmas lights and them to move people, that's when you get kind of hairy.
Oh, you know, when you want to talk about technology and that scares you, there was a fad, and this is back in the early 80s, where pop machines were talking. There weren't very many of them. Apparently, they weren't real popular. They're probably expensive. But I went to buy a soda from a machine, not aware that it was a talking machine. And I about had heart failure. My mother just about died laughing because she saw me just about climb out of my skin when this pop machine started talking to me. I was not expecting it. It was shocking. And, no, I didn't like it. Maybe that was partly the reason they didn't catch on, is I wasn't the only one that wasn't thrilled with the machine that talked to me.
And now we have our telephones talking to us. Pretty soon it's probably going to be the next big thing. You go in your refrigerator, your refrigerator is going to tell you that you're running low on milk and butter, and your refrigerator is going to have a conversation with you. And hopefully my refrigerator will not be telling me that I don't need to eat that.
The most likely message to come into your refrigerator is that the leftovers in the back expired 2 weeks ago. Yeah, so that would be the most likely message I would anticipate on a refrigerator. But, you know, when we go off on the electronic house routine, you know, we are coming to a point where that's not impossible to have your refrigerator monitor what you have in it and how much.
Yeah, my thing is with the intrusiveness of the way social networking has gone, I really just don't want my neighbor that's 4 doors down to be nosing around through trying to find out what's in my electronically capable refrigerator.
Yeah, I see the Facebook update now. Gregory Miller needs to buy milk. Yeah.
Everyone
could remind you. Yeah, you know, we're seeing a shift in it. A lot of people think that the Facebook bubble is going to burst in the next year or two, that it's gotten so big that it's become unmanageable and people will start leaving in droves. We've seen it with other sites.
We had said about the devices. Facebook is actually, and we're not picking on it, being replaced with a concept called Instagram, and that's available only to people that are using iPhones. So that's what's been taking Facebook's market share. And that's another one of those things where, would you buy a car if you could only take it to a certain gas station to put gas in?
And that's kind of what Apple does, is it makes you shop at Apple gas stations. And it even tells you that the Apple gas that you bought is no longer considered acceptable, and they're taking it away from you.
Well, the biggest complaint I've seen about the iPhones was the fact that the battery was not renewable, and you have to go through flaming hoops and rat maces in order to get the device switched around.
Okay, that one I was not particularly aware of. I know that a lot of people complain about the battery life on their Androids, and as a result, these oversized batteries that essentially double the thickness of the phone but provide a much more enduring charge have come into existence, as well as spare batteries, so that you can have one on the charger while you're at work. When you get home from work, you swap the battery out, and then you can go and do your evening or weekend thing. You know, and before, we've always had to plug in our phones, and we've all been in the, you know, the family vehicle with multiple family members, and everybody needs to plug in their cell phone, and there's only one charger or one plug-in to plug in a charger and so forth and so on. So we've seen the battle over the mobile chargers and the scramble to find a charger that works, you know, even at home. A number of devices are now using interchangeable chargers, which makes it nice, but can also result to whose charger is that, where's my charger, and so forth and so on in multi-phone families. You know, we've seen a lot of changes in the last couple of years in terms of technology. But in terms of changes, one thing that's changing is the clock, and we're getting down to the last couple of minutes. Now, Greg, you host your own show, and just in case everybody doesn't know when your show is, you want to tell them.
Well, our show is here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It's called Voice of the People, and it is on the air from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Saturday, and it's followed by News on the Flip Side with Joe Montalvo and Stephanie Benetti, which is followed by Jeffrey Pritchett in the Church of Mavis, and that's our Saturday night lineup, so that's where you will be able to find me next.
Okay. And as far as anybody who's been listening tonight, we air every Tuesday from 7 to 9 Central Time, which is 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and we'd love to have you back. We would love to get more audience participation, too. So all of you people who've been sitting listening tonight and thinking that we don't know a hill of beans from a stack of potatoes, you should have called in. You should have emailed us, said something. So keep that in mind. Get brave. I promise we don't bite. I won't even send you any hate mail. Even if you send me hate mail, I don't send it back. So, from now on, come on, folks, let's interact a little bit more. Let me know what you do like and what you don't like and what you want to hear more of, and I will try to incorporate that. So, with that, we are out of time, and I hope that tonight's program has given everybody a little bit of food for thought, as well as illumination for your personal journey towards truth. Tune in again next time as we bring another guest, another topic, and a whole new idea for your consideration. Tonight you've been listening to The Dawn of Shades, and I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.
I want some of that bacon chocolate.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are and wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful place we call home, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I appreciate it. I'm here because you matter and because you have a right to know. And those who listen to this show each and every night know that we dive off into the world of the strange and the unexplained night after night. Tonight will be no different. And, well, it'll be different in that each show is different, but we will be in the world of the strange and unexplained. At the top of the show, I said, I'm here because you matter. And that's really, really the truth. We do a lot of things here because you matter. And one of those things is we publish a newsletter every 2 weeks. And it's absolutely free. I invite you to, and I urge you, to subscribe to that newsletter if you have not already done so. It's real easy to do. All you have to do is scoot over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. And when you get over there, right in the middle of your screen, you'll see a big word that says K-Files. Well, if you click that, then you can subscribe.